106.3.
Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Greinick, your host. Thank you for joining us this morning. We want to get right to it for the sake of time. We are pleased to have back in studio Brian Jack, candidate for Congress District 3 for the runoff. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning to you.
This introduction for Brian is from the campaign website, so here we go. Brian Jack is one of President Trump's most trusted allies who has worked by his side for the last 8 years to make America great again. A sixth-generation Georgian, Brian was raised in Fayette County and is a graduate of Woodward Academy, where he played basketball and baseball. With an early passion for service to his community, Brian spent his summers during college working at Peachtree City Hall, helping build the city's comprehensive plan. Following graduation from Pepperdine University, Brian pursued a career in advocacy for conservative values, working for Dr. Ben Carson in the movement to strengthen the United States-Israel relationship. 2016, Brian joined President Trump's campaign, where he led the effort to defeat the never-Trump opposition during the contentious Republican primaries. Brian worked in the White House from the first to the last day of President Trump's administration, President Trump appointing Brian to serve as the White House political director responsible for implementing the America's first agenda. Brian worked by President Trump's side to stop illegal immigration, pass historic tax cuts, confirm conservative judges, and eliminate needless regulations. Inspired by the generations before us who made our country great, Brian is a member of the Georgia Historical Society, the Fayette County Historical Society, and the Sons of the American Revolution. Brian is also a passionate fan of Georgia sports teams, from Atlanta Braves to the Peachtree City semi-pro soccer team. September 13, 2020, he was promoted to assistant to the president, the highest rank of an executive office of the presidential staff. And he, upon the announcement of the 2024 presidential campaign, Jack joined the campaign as one of its three key advisors. And he was also President Liaison's, Trump's liaison to Congress, and he managed the efforts to secure endorsements from elected officials and Republican Party leaders for the 2024 Republican presidential preference primary, or for the primary. Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. It's a privilege to be back in Carrollton. And as you noted, as a Woodward Academy graduate, I look forward to August 16th, Woodward's hosting Carrollton for the first game of the season. And may not go so well for my alma mater, Woodward, because Carrollton's got maybe the best team in the state this year. But it's a privilege to be back in Carrollton.
Yeah, and I think that prediction is correct. So anyway, I don't think anybody would be surprised if the first question is regard to last Thursday. We're going to hear hundreds of times between now and November 5th that your former boss is a convicted felon. Your reaction to last Thursday's verdict?
Well, I think it's a disgrace. I mean, I think everybody that watched the trial, followed the trial, saw plenty of unconstitutional stuff happening. And ultimately, I do think President Trump will win on appeal. Sentencing, though, is 3 days before the Republican National Convention, which to me is no coincidence. We'll see how that unfolds, but I'm encouraged by President Trump's reaction and response. $54 million raised in the first 24 hours, breaking every fundraising record around, and I think you're seeing a lot of folks that may have been wary in the first couple elections for him are starting to come back to his team and come back to his side. I think they are disgusted by what happened. And I think this is what happens when you have out-of-control prosecutors and you have cases brought forth in highly Democrat jurisdictions. We see that in Washington, D.C. We see that in Fulton County, and we certainly saw that in Manhattan. When you've got a jury pool, 90% Democrats, how do you expect to have a fair trial? I don't think any Republican could have a fair trial.
And they say of those donors, 30% of them are brand new donors.
And that's why President Trump, I mean, he has boundless optimism, but you saw him just 2 days later with a hero's welcome in Newark, New Jersey. There was a big mixed martial arts fight, UFC 302, on Saturday night. He walked in and received a hero's welcome. So I think the country's rallying around him, and I think his poll numbers are only going to go up, especially here in our state of Georgia.
But the term convicted felon, I mean, there's got to be concern that that's going to impact independent voters.
Well, and I think I'm glad you mentioned that. If you look at Alex Soros, who's related to George, of course, on Thursday night, he tweeted out. He said, you know, they should say that over and over and over and over. To me, it just is endemic of a case that was brought forth for a purely political purpose to enable the Biden campaign to use that that language. And I think that also as part of their overall strategy to distract from Joe Biden's record. I mean, if you run on the Trump record versus the Biden record, I talked about this last time we spoke, 70-80% of the country aligns with President Trump's policies, his record. And I think they're going to try, the Biden campaign is going to try to do everything they possibly can to not talk about policies and issues and focus more on what you just mentioned. And hopefully, I think on appeal, that will be reversed.
Will that be a Supreme Court appeal?
So I think it first goes to the New York Appellate Court, and then, of course, they can always file to go directly to the Supreme Court. But I think anybody that looks at the jurisprudence within that trial would find it very hard to believe that that was a fair trial.
Yeah, you mentioned comparison. I mean, it's really unique, and I don't hear many people talk about it. Basically, we have the Trump record, and now we have the Biden record. I mean, where and when in modern times have we been able to compare two records and have the choice between them for president?
I'm thinking of it myself. I mean, you go back to 1912. I mean, when was the last time you had two presidents running at the same time with two records? But that's what you're going to find from the Biden campaign. They don't want to talk about his record because they know they will lose on every single issue within it. So that's the job as us Republicans. We want to send Donald Trump back to the White House, elect him our 47th president. Let's focus on the border. Let's focus on the economy. Let's focus on the things that matter to our everyday lives. And I think if we do that, we'll see a landslide victory this November.
Well, that's a perfect setup. Let's take a break, and we'll come back. We'll jump into some of those issues, and then toward the end, we'll talk specifically about the runoff campaign and the runoff election. But first, these words.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
The Entrepreneur Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined, curriculum-based track to acquire essential knowledge and skills for success in business and leadership. Critical areas include identifying entrepreneurial characteristics, selecting a value position, and business model development. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Good morning. Welcome back to Community Voice. I'm Steve Graddick, your host. Delighted to have you with us. We have Brian Jack. He's a candidate for Congress, District 3, the District 3 runoff. Under the open border policy of the Biden administration, there are 1.8 million known gotaways so far, and of course, an unknown number of gotaways. So do you expect more crime and terrorism inside our country in the future?
Well, a statistic that should be harrowing to everyone who listens is that in Venezuela, murders are down 67% right now. So when you have that and then you look at what's happening at our border, it's no surprise that a lot of criminals are coming over our border and they're being released into our communities because there's overpopulation detention centers. And frankly, the Biden policies enable and engender that type of response from illegal immigration. So I think what we need to do in our next Congress is solely responsible in doing is leveraging the power of the purse to reenact the policies that made our border secure in the first place under the President Trump's administration. I was proud to work with him on that. And look, we found it. We built over 500 miles of border wall. We had to go find funding for that. And more often than not, the Democrats would throw up every roadblock they possibly could. But we were successful in that endeavor. Wherever there's border wall now, we have a more secure border. we've got to reverse some of these maddening policies, right? Catch and release is something that was ended by the Trump administration and something that we saw instantly reenacted, reinstituted by the Biden administration. What that means is that when you apprehend illegal immigrants, for us, they were in detention centers. But when you apprehend illegal immigrants today, if Border Patrol, which is trying to do everything they can to secure our border, illegal immigrants are released into the country, given a one-way ticket to the city of their choosing, and encouraged to come back in a couple years for their adjudication hearing. That's a real challenge. We also had a policy called Remain in Mexico. When people were seeking asylum into our country, they remained in Mexico before they were allowed to have that that hearing. Again, we should not be using taxpayer-funded, your, my, all of the listeners' funds to fly illegal immigrants around the country waiting for some adjudicating hearing. It's a challenge, and at the same time, what you're finding is some of these illegal immigrants, when they walk into social welfare centers, they're given a voter registration card. And Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, swing states this November, being encouraged to vote. We should have federal legislation in Congress. Congress should pass federal legislation that requires that American citizens vote in American elections, and a proof of citizenship is provided to do so.
You mentioned Venezuela. The accused killer of Lincoln Riley had a hearing in Atlanta Friday. He apparently was associated with a gang also.
And just to note, if you look at the pathway for him, you know, one of the reasons why he was roaming our streets illegally is that he was released. Chuck Grassley did some interesting stuff in a Senate hearing talking about it. He was released on quote-unquote humanitarian grounds because they did not have enough facility and detention space. So we've got to use, Congress has uniquely the power of the purse. The Constitution and our framers gave that power to Congress. Our next Congress should work hand in glove with the Trump administration to make sure that his border priorities are fully funded and that that tough border policy is enacted. Because I saw it for 4 years working along his side in the White House. That had a huge impact, a transformational impact for our country. And you also talk about the number of talk about numbers. I speak about artificial intelligence a lot. I talk about Google a lot in my campaign. If you Google today how many illegal immigrants are in the country, you're going to see a number pop up that says 10 million. But in reality, it's about 17 million. So that disinformation that we're seeing each and every day is something that should concern all of us. It's a problem. It's going to continue to be a problem unless we enact tough policies to reverse it.
More people than are in the state of Georgia.
More people in the state of Georgia. And if, were it not for legal immigration, California would have half of his electoral votes. If you go back to citizenship and census counting, it's a real challenge.
Well, you mentioned, I brought up the power of the purse last time, and you augmented that by talking about the power of the subpoena.
Right.
So easy to talk about the power of the purse, but how effective is the power of the subpoena for Congress and the U.S. House?
Well, the power of the subpoena is real. I mean, we started off with what happened last Thursday. If I was in Congress today, I would want a subpoena sent to Alvin Bragg right now, subpoenaing all communications between Joe Biden's White House, Department of Justice, and himself. I'd want to look into how that trial was managed. I want to look into any instruction from the prosecutors, any potential tampering there. I would want to do everything I possibly could. And Congress has a unique role because it wouldn't surprise your listeners to know that we, our taxpayer-funded dollars, flow into that district attorney's office to help fight crime in New York. So Congress uses that power, and it's something that the power of the subpoena is real.
So is that what we're talking about? Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, yesterday said the House Republicans would use, quote, everything in our arsenal, unquote, to retaliate for the guilty verdict against former President Trump.
I hope so. And I think you're going to see one of my friends who's endorsed my campaign, Jim Jordan, a really good friend of mine. I think you're going to see he leads the Committee on Judiciary. He also leads the Select Committee on the Weaponization of Justice, which is something I talk a lot about within my own campaign. I'm excited to see what he does this week because there's got to be some accountability. There's a lack of accountability in our country at the border. In the Afghanistan withdrawal, when we talk about foreign policy, I mean, there is so much lack of accountability. We've got to do everything we can to reinforce that.
Reportedly, President Biden is going to do some sort of executive action tomorrow on the border. Have you seen that?
I haven't, and I think it's just smoke and mirrors. I think that he's had 3.5 years to continue the policies of Donald Trump. 42% of Democrats support President Trump's plan to make our border strong and secure. And it shows because, again, as I got back at the outset, Joe Biden's doing everything he can to distract from his record. We as Republicans have to do everything we can to put that record up. It's one of the reasons I'm running for Congress. It's one of the reasons why we should get out and vote, not just in a couple weeks, but also this November. Every single Republican in our country, every swing voter, should be out voting for Donald Trump to make sure we can reverse our country's future.
Let's shift gears. I understand Iran is now 60% complete in finishing a nuclear warhead. Someone who worked with the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, how close are we, do you think, to nuclear war?
So I think that the real challenge, and you talk about Iran, we are not respected abroad. Under President Trump, when we traveled the world, I was privileged to travel alongside him, he was respected by our foreign adversaries. They respected him. They wouldn't dare do things against him. Today, you have a very weak president, a very weak foreign policy, and we saw it. On day one, we withdrew from the disastrous Iran nuclear deal on day one of the Trump administration, right? And we imposed sanctions. The Biden administration gave him billions of dollars just a few years ago that went to funding a lot of the attacks on Israel, as we saw last October. And by the way, there are 500,000 Americans living in Israel. I think it should be our priority. Congress should use everything in our power and possibility to do everything we possibly can to ensure Iran does not have a nuclear weapons capability. That should be our foremost priority. Sanctions should be used. Sanctions should be leveraged. We should have a tough foreign policy to show that we mean business and that nothing that they do should enable them to lead to that nuclear weapons capability.
We honored the memory of Sergeant Jerome Rivers of Carrollton at the Memorial Day ceremony at the Veterans Park. He's one of three Georgians killed by an Iranian drone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you hear about the $90 billion that's gone to Iran in the last 3 years or so of different forms and fashions, I mean, you can only wonder the connection there.
And look at President Trump's record. I was privileged to be with him the night that he ordered the strike on Soleimani. And look what happened.
How many American hostages are still in Gaza, do you know?
In Gaza? I
think it's five or six, right?
Yeah, but you also have plenty of Israeli citizens too. But to your point, I talk about this a lot. We have 500,000 Americans living in Israel. I mean, these are our fellow countrymen, our fellow citizens. They were under attack just like Israelis were on October 2023.
It doesn't seem like we hear much about the hostages, though.
Well, I think you're going to see the media do everything they can to cover up everything that's going on. They're going to manufacture this discontent on college campuses, as we saw over the last month, most of which is fueled and funneled by professional agitators, and I think it's a real travesty. I mean, you look at when you see George Washington University, one of our nation's leading institutions, put George Washington's statue with a Hamas flag, I think that should concern every single one of us.
Yeah, and cover up the head
right
of George. Okay, well, let's shift gears. We're running through a lot of stuff real fast, but then we'll get to the political part of it in a minute. What should Congress do about inflation? 19% overall in the last 3 years. What should or what can Congress do?
So I would do three things. I talk about this a lot. The first round of this race, second round, I'll be talking about this until Election Day, and hopefully in a position to enact these legislative priorities thereafter. The first thing we should do is we should unleash America's energy potential. We have been given, God has blessed us with abundant energy resources across our country, and we don't leverage that. And if you want to look at, you've got a great sign coming in, decrying what's happening at the border, especially as it relates to fentanyl. Go to some of these Appalachian communities where coal is abundant, and those are devastated. Those communities are devastated by the radical left's war on coal. We should unleash America's energy potential because everything we have has an energy cost associated with it. These rising inflation prices are directly attributed to rising energy costs. Secondly, I would deregulate. We in the Trump administration repealed for every new regulation, we took back two old ones. That was the promise that we made. When the administration ended, we looked at our record. For every regulation, we repealed eight regulations. Deregulation is the least sexy thing to talk about, one of the most important things we can do to stop inflation. And last but not least, we've got to rein in government spending. If we do those three things, we can uniquely position ourselves to stop inflation, unleash America's economy, and unleash our energy potential.
We're going to run out of time, but before we leave that subject, I understand that if President Biden is reelected, he's going to increase taxes by $5 trillion over 10 years? Can Congress do something
about
that?
So in 2017, I was one of the point folks within the White House working with Congress to pass the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was the greatest tax cut, largest tax cut in American history. And we saw what happened. Our economy was booming thereafter. Many of those provisions expire and quote-unquote sunset in 2025. Our next Congress is going to have to work with the Trump administration and do everything they possibly can to ensure we make those tax cuts permanent. In Washington, more often than not, you see people will make laws and say, okay, in 7 or 8 years, they no longer exist. This is these tax cuts and the regulations, deregulation around it. We should do everything we can to make sure they're made permanent in 2025.
Okay, let's shift gears once again. And sure. Let's talk about politics. We're running a story right now that your opponent, former state senator Mike Dugan, said at a Republican meeting, I think you attended Saturday also at a different time, but that basically you lack the business experience, having never made a payroll, lack the legislative experience, never bringing forth a piece of legislation, authoring a piece yourself, and therefore he's better qualified to be in Congress. How do you respond to that?
Well, that's his prerogative, and he can run the campaign he wants to run. I think that I bring to the table a unique set of experience. I've worked for President Trump for the last 8 years, and we talk about what we've done with businesses. Look at all the tax cuts we enacted in 2017. Look at the ability we leverage within the Small Business Administration and so many different other facets of the federal government to unleash America's energy and economic potential and help small businesses cut through red tape. Because more often than not, as I travel the district and meet with small businesses, they talk about how great things were under President Trump. I was proud to have played a role in that, and how horrible things are today under Joe Biden. And we're encouraged by the result. We won 14 of 15 counties in the first round, and I was proud to earn 47% of the vote in the first round, and I'm trying to do everything I can to educate folks to make sure you know there is a runoff election on June 18th. Early voting starts from June 10th, concludes June 14th, and if you happen to be traveling, you're on vacation, hope you're able to go enjoy time with your friends and family, just know that the deadline to request an absentee ballot is June 7th.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more about what you hear on the campaign trail, and then I've got a couple questions to wrap it up.
Sure.
But what are the people, you know, you mentioned about, and certainly, you know, we're funded 98% by small businesses.
Yeah.
And so we get that. But what other things are, is it immigration? Is it the economy? Is the economy stupid, or what is it that really predominates among the electorate?
Well, I think, a couple things. First off, an issue that's near and dear to many of us at home is the delays that we experience with post-mail today. Like the Palmetto facility is something that's gotten a lot of coverage by the Atlanta media, and also a lot of members of Congress have gone down there. And I talk about this a lot. And as I mentioned at the outset, and as I mentioned last time we spoke, I talk about throughout my campaign, I think there's a lack of accountability within the Biden administration that trickles all the way down to that facility. One of the ideas you're going to hear a lot about over the next few months is this notion of a special schedule of federal employees that enables federal employees to be employed at will, meaning like yourself or like myself when I was working for President Trump or even working at the White House. If I was not doing my job, I would lose my job. If I was not doing my job well, I would be reprimanded. I would be in a position where I'm required and mandated to do the job that I swore my oath to do. And what we find over and over is that with the lack of accountability in federal employment, there's, you know, delays, there's problems, wherever that may be. If you're not doing your job, you should not be able to have your job. So that's something that I hope we can see more of. It's something the Trump administration, I think you're going to find, is going to push and promote. It's something that Congress can uniquely do with that power of the purse. You can set the different schedules within the federal employment processes. And I think accountability is something I hear a lot about on the campaign trail. They want to see their member of Congress hold people accountable and ensure accountability is throughout every single layer and facet of the federal administration.
Would that extend to the point of abolishing certain executive offices?
I strongly support it. I also recognize the Senate. We got to win back the Senate in order to make that happen. I think if you're going to look to drastically reduce the size of government. One of the things you can do, not just through the power of the purse, you can also start to move some of these departments and agencies outside of Washington, D.C. We did that in the Trump administration. I was proud to work with the Department of Interior. Had a good idea. Let's move the Department of Interior, some of their big administrative agencies, to different states. So we moved them to Colorado.
But really, the legislative branch should be the dominant branch, should it not? Not the executive branch, but because of the bureaucracy, they've become the dominant branch of government.
Especially with the civil service protections around the employment hires and protocols, that's a real, real challenge. And not to mention, too, I think this is a call to action. We've got to do everything we can to elect Republican senators. We can elect Donald Trump, we can elect a Republican House, but we need a Republican Senate, not just for the confirmation of judges, but to your point, to do some of the things we need to get done to turn our country around.
If you're as old as I am, you remember that Ronald Reagan also used the phrase, make America great again.
Sure.
He put the word let's in front of it.
Yeah.
Didn't use it as much as as Trump does, but what's wrong with that phrase? It gets criticized a lot.
I think, to your point, we want to make our country great again. We feel, and I think a lot of your listeners feel, that there was a time when our country truly was great. We were respected. People respected one another. You could go down the street. You could engage in colloquial conversation. Today, that is not the case. And we saw that with COVID. I mean, I talk about this a lot. Again, lack of accountability. I saw just over the weekend that Dr. Fauci said that, you know, the 6 feet thing was never really a thing.
Yeah, it was arbitrary. It had no scientific
basis. But there's
basis.
No accountability. And that
gripes me.
And I struggle with that. And I also, you know, if you question the efficacy of the vaccine, you were, you know, regarded, the left regarded you as some threat to humanity. I think
there's a House subcommittee now active on the origins of COVID.
Without question. And at the same time, too, I think there's a House subcommittee. I know there's a House subcommittee on the weaponization of justice. You got to look into that, too. I mean, the fact they were trying to divide families, they were trying to make sure that you couldn't go see your loved ones in hospitals. I mean, this is maddening what happened. And we got to do everything we can to hold them accountable next Congress.
All right. Well, we ran through a lot. And I know sometimes when you do that, it's kind of, makes your head spin. But we're going to wrap it up. I know you've got another appointment, and I guess we always have the tradition here that, your elevator pitch, you go to the front door, you've got a minute because the food is on the stove. And so why in the world should anybody vote for Brian Jack?
Well, first and foremost, I'm grateful to everyone who voted for me in the first round. As I mentioned, we won 14 of 15 counties, earned 47% of the vote. I bring to the table a unique set of experiences. I, for the last 8 years, have worked for the greatest president of our lifetimes, Donald Trump. I've been by his side throughout those 8 years, but I got my start working at Peachtree City Hall. I think it's a special thing to start at the most local level and to understand why accountability really matters, and to have employed that experience throughout the last 8 years working for President Trump and by his side. I was one of the very few people that served in his White House from the first to last day of his administration. As you noted during my introduction, I helped guide him through the presidential primaries, put him in the place he is today to become the Republican nominee for president. And in that time, I had a chance to work with him to unleash America's energy potential, unleash our economic potential, make our border secure. I got to see and experience every single one of those things directly negotiating with Congress to get stuff done. I think that experience is unique. It's non-traditional, but I think it's unique, and I think it gives me a chance to be incredibly effective for our congressional district and to give ourselves a new generation of conservative leadership across our country, excited about what this next Congress can do, excited about what the next administration can bring, and I'm very proud to be endorsed by my good friend, President Donald J. Trump.
And if people want to learn more, where should they go?
www.brianjack.com.
Brian, thank you for coming in. We thank everyone for listening. We thank our sponsors. Go out and make it a great day. You're in tune to WLBB Carrollton.